Hi, I'm Mandy.
And I'm Ben.
And this is Behind the Visa Window with ex-visa officers,
where we give the insider's perspective on the U.S. visa interview process.
Hey guys, welcome back to our podcast, Behind the Visa Window. We are your hosts. My name is Mandy Fierbacher. I am a former consul and visa officer. And this is Ben. And he has worked in places like China and Colombia, also as a visa officer. We meet every couple of weeks to discuss different visa issues that visa officers see behind the visa window, but also to give you guys updates. We have a really special episode for you guys today. What we're going to be talking about is exactly who are visa officers. I feel like we group them together. Like, there's this whole group of people. They work overseas at U.S. embassies and consulates around the world. They're the people standing at that window. You know, when they say next and you start walking up, you're probably really nervous. They usually don't have much expression. But exactly how did this person get to this position and this job that they're doing, where they're interviewing people day after day, making these very important decisions about your visa application and whether or not you have the right to travel to the United States. And so I thought it would be a good way to sort of introduce to you guys our own personal experiences and what we went through and how did we become visa officers doing this line of work. Sometimes, you know, we're speaking different languages depending on what country we're working in. And, do you want to go first, Ben? Maybe tell us a little bit about how that happened for you?
Yeah, well, let's first tell our listeners why we're going to talk about this. It's not just because we like talking about ourselves. I mean, I might enjoy it from time to time, but it's also because if you understand who these people are, maybe you can empathize with them a little bit more. You can understand where they're coming from, what their situation is, and that might help you be just a little bit less nervous in your visa interview. And I know that, you know, it's hard to imagine that you get in that situation that those nerves are going to come over you, right? It's because it's high stakes. You know that right then and there, a decision is going to be made that's going to affect your life greatly, your plans, your studies, your businesses, and you get nervous about it. But if you understand who this person is on the other side, maybe it's going to reduce that nervous level just a little bit. And maybe that's the edge that you need in order to be confident enough to express yourself well and get your visa issued. So yeah, I'll begin, Mandy. To become a visa officer, how do you get there? Who are these people that are in these jobs? Was there a job listing for visa officer and you submitted your resume? Mandy, is that how you became a visa officer?
Most definitely not. Yeah, it's actually quite a long process. And you know, the really interesting thing about visa officers is this is not the job that they really sign up for. It is generally something that what's called a U.S. diplomat, you know, somebody who is representing their country's government in a foreign country, they go overseas and they do a job. And generally the first or second assignment that they do is that of a visa officer. It's just sort of an entry level sort of position working as a diplomat for the United States overseas. And in order to qualify to become a diplomat, it is a very long process. So, and I believe Ben, you and I probably went through the process around the same time, but for me, it actually starts with a test. So there is actually an examination that you take for all people who want to represent the US government overseas. I think they offer it maybe two or three times a year. You go into a classroom of some sort, you know, sometimes it's on campus in a community college, wherever it is, and then you take that test, and then you find out in a few weeks' time whether or not you pass and whether or not you move on to the next step of the process.
Yeah, that's what it was like for me as well. You go into this job, and many people enter this job with different plans for their careers. And you mentioned assignments, and I think that's a good thing to focus on. So you've gone through this long process. People have been educated at, you know, some of the top universities in the U.S. A lot of my colleagues that I worked with, and I'm sure yours as well, Mandy, had gone to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, you know, Columbia, Johns Hopkins, the best universities in the country with master's degrees, some with law degrees, even PhDs. And then you take this test, you go through this hiring process, and then everyone starts out equal. Everyone starts out exactly equal coming in, and they're assigned to their first job and their second job. And these assignments are not necessarily what they've chosen for themselves. They express their preferences. I expressed, you know, where I would like to go. But then in the end, they said, listen, you speak Chinese. We need you to do visas in China. That's where you're needed. And so that's where I was assigned to go. And so I got there. I really wanted to learn a new language when I came in. And so I was hoping to get taught a new language and be sent to a new country because I had already spent a lot of time in China, but they sent me to China. So that's just one example, a personal example of where it wasn't my first choice, but that's where I was. Many people are also in this situation where they are serving not only in a country that they didn't choose as their first choice, but perhaps the job too, because the visas, like you said, the doing of the visas day to day at the window, doing those interviews, that's not what at least 80% of the visa officers have signed up hoping to do. They've signed up hoping to be political officers, economic officers, public diplomacy officers, management officers, but they're assigned as all entry-level people are for at least 1 year. And in these days, there's many that are assigned to 4 years of it, as I was. And Mandy, how many did you do?
I did six years.
Mm-hmm. 6 years of it, right? So we're assigned to these jobs where it's not exactly what we were expecting we were going to do or hoping to do. It's not our ideal assignment, right? So you get people that are in these jobs who are not necessarily as enthusiastic about doing the job as we would hope them to be.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely right. That's such a good point, Ben. And one other thing I wanted to touch on that you mentioned is, you know, you were hoping to learn a new language once you entered this career path. And that's something important for our listeners to know as well, is that, you know, it's a huge perk. One of the many reasons that people join this line of work to become, you know, U.S. diplomats is because you actually get to learn new languages. You get to go live in new countries that perhaps you've never even traveled to before. But it's important to know this because oftentimes if you are, you know, if your home country is one that is not, English is not, you know, the country's native language, that the visa officers at that U.S. embassy or consulate may have only learned that language for a, you know, a short period of time before they were assigned to your home country to start doing visa and immigration work. And as a result, sometimes when you are responding in your, you know, native language, it seems like perhaps that the visa officer isn't really quite understanding you, or perhaps they're, you know, asking you questions repeatedly. They might have only learned that language, you know, for a few months' time, and, you know, taken a test to make sure they're quote unquote proficient. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, they've arrived in your home country and they're interviewing you, you know, nervously and not really understanding everything that you're saying.
On the other hand, you may interview with a visa officer who is, their heritage is from that country, right? You may interview with someone who speaks the language natively because they learned it from their parents, or maybe they were even born there and then immigrated to the US and they speak the language fluently. They understand the country very well. They may have even have advanced studies in that country's economy or history or something like that. And there's no differentiating between those two officers. They both have equal amount of authority to make whatever visa decision they're going to make with the applicants that are randomly assigned to their window.
Yes, yes. And oh my gosh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I remember there were quite a few times when I was working at the US Embassy in Beijing, China, where I would actually have, you know, visa applicants come to my window and they would be taken aback that I looked just like they did. And, you know, I think a few even asked, you know, can I speak to an American officer, or, oh, are you here to take my fingerprints? Because I've already done that. And so, you know, try not to say things like that, even if the visa officer doesn't, and I think I did a YouTube video on this, you know, doesn't look as you expect an American visa officer to look, an American diplomat to look, because, you know, I think that's something that we're actually very proud of as American citizens, that there's so many international citizens that come to the US, you know, perhaps they naturalize into American citizens, but we all look different and yet we're all Americans. And so, you know, just be aware that that could happen at your next visa interview, that the person could look just like you and actually speak your native tongue just as well as you do. And yet they are going to be the person making that very important decision on your visa application, and they have the authority to do that.
That's right. So you've got the difference in language ability and knowledge about the country that you're in, where it just depends on which officer you randomly walk up to. And you're gonna get an officer with differing levels of expertise and knowledge about that. In the same way, you may walk up to the window of an officer like you, Mandy, has been doing this for 6 years, that's been doing it for 5.5 years. Now, that's not that common, usually 4 years max, but you may then also walk up to the window of an officer who's only been doing it for 2 weeks, and they are on their own making these decisions, these complex decisions that they're having to make rapidly in as little time as possible, and they've only been doing it for 2 weeks. And what does that mean for you as an applicant? If you walk up to an officer that's been there for 4 years, they have been through the regulations, they've been through the laws, they've seen these cases, they've done 60,000, 70,000 interviews, they've got the experience where they know what's going on, they're more confident, you're not gonna surprise them as much with an atypical situation that you present to them. However, if you walk up to the window of that person who's only been at post for 2 weeks, their language skills might be a little bit shaky, even though if their language skills are good, they're not as immersed in the regulations and the laws as the ones who have been there for 4 years are. You present them with an atypical situation that they haven't encountered yet, and all of a sudden they're put on guard, like, wait, what's going on? I haven't ever heard of this before. Wait, you can do this with a B visa? I've never heard of this. Wait, how do I search through the regulations and find if this is allowed or not? You're going to get a different level of confidence on the part of the officer in handling your situation.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And this is the part that you really have no control over, because you never know what type of officer you're going to get. It just depends on, you know, when your interview is, you know, how early, you know, the next person. Usually they actually spread it out so that you're, you know, going in chronological order to whatever next window becomes open. But even despite that, you know, I think visa officers, once you are in the job, we have a culture about us of how we look at these cases. We have weekly meetings where we touch base as a, you know, as an entire office to talk about, you know, hey, these are the trends that we're seeing at the visa window. Has anybody seen this? And everybody talks about it and make sure that they get on the same page. So there is a right way to prepare for the visa interview, and there is a wrong way. And what we do at Argo Visa is, you know, all of our consulting officers are former visa officers with the Department of State. We've all been through this process that me and Ben have been through, you know, the hopes and aspirations of being a U.S. diplomat overseas, going through the rigors of taking the test and doing the interview and finally getting assigned overseas. And so we really fully understand how it is to prepare for that visa interview the right way, so that you get it right the first time and that you are, you're prepared and you're not caught sort of like deer in headlights, not sure how you should respond, or, you know, it becomes like a very interesting interaction between you and potentially a visa officer who's not that experienced. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure you get it right.
Yeah. And in terms of preparation, well, can you be prepared, Mandy, for instance, if you go in and you walk up to your officer and their language skill is not very good, can you ask for a different one? Ask for somebody who speaks the language a little bit better?
Absolutely not. And I think that is a really good way to offend the visa officer, because you're basically telling them they're not good at their job. So I would not recommend that you do that. I would say that, you know, when you are talking about your situation, to try to use, if you're using your native tongue, you're not speaking in English, try to use terminology that is fairly easy to understand. You don't want to go into very detailed, complex, you know, terminology that this officer might not have the necessary language skills to understand. And that's something that we can help you with and help you, you know, we can help you decide, okay, would somebody understand that? I actually just worked with a client last night who is a very gifted sort of engineer and tended to talk about his work in a very complicated way. And part of my work as an Argo officer was to help him break down those terms to explain it in a way that is very easily understandable for a visa officer, because we want there to be a connection between you and the visa officer so that they can understand what you're saying, they can understand your situation, and they can say, wow, this person needs to get to the United States as soon as possible to do what they need to do, visa approved.
Mm-hmm. So you can't ask for somebody who speaks the language better. Okay, what about asking for the manager? I'm not one to ask for the manager, you know, in a restaurant or anything like that. But, you know, some people are, some people, you know, if they're unsatisfied, they might ask for the manager. Can you do that in the embassy or the consulate? If you don't like the decision that's been made, can you ask to talk to the manager?
Absolutely not. And there is, legally speaking, there's something that actually prevents consular managers from changing the decisions of individual visa officers. Now, this is important to understand because this means that whatever decision that is made by your visa officer, that is the final say. Even if they're an officer who's only been there for 2 weeks and they're inexperienced and perhaps they don't speak the language very well, if they make a decision to deny your case, not even their supervisor will be able to change that decision. And this is why it is so important to be prepared so that you can convince this officer, whoever he or she is in front of you, to make a decision in your favor.
Okay, so I can't ask for somebody with better language skills. I can't ask for a manager. What if I go to my interview and I walk up to the window and it's the same officer that refused my visa last month? Can I talk to a different officer then?
Yes, and actually, generally, you can. It depends on how big or small the embassy is. Sometimes in certain smaller countries, perhaps there's only the embassy there, there might only be one officer. So you might not be able to get a different officer. But for most of the world, if you have been previously denied by one officer, you should actually get another officer to look at your case. And even if this is not something that you bring up, you know, they will immediately recognize that when they open up your DS-160 application. So you might just want to wait for them to
they should. They should see that in the previous notes that they were the officer that had taken the notes. They won't remember you personally. Just, and don't take it as an offense, but they will 100% not remember you personally. They're interviewing hundreds of people per day, you know, thousands of people per month. They're not going to remember one person that they spoke to for one minute, you know, 3 weeks ago or 6 months ago. So they're not going to remember you personally. Don't let the interview go for quite a while without saying, hey, you know, actually we interviewed before and you refused me. You know, you can walk up and say hello, but they should very soon recognize that they refused you the previous time. And if not, you should tell them, oh, I just want to remind you that I'm the applicant that you refused 3 months ago. Do I need to change to a different officer? And they will change you. You know, I know that some people think that maybe the officer will try to get you to try to refuse you again. I've never seen that happen. That would be an extreme dereliction of their duty, because what you could do is then apply again and then come in for a third interview and randomly be assigned to a different officer. And that new officer will see that their colleague refused you twice in a row. And that is a big no-no. And they are probably going to bring it up with the managers. And that is something that an officer would get in trouble for, is for interviewing the same applicant twice in a row and refusing them without passing them off to a different officer.
Yes, yes. I think that's such a good point. Ben, actually, I have a question for you now. So I find that, you know, many clients of ours who have had prior visa refusals, their first course of action is to talk to an immigration attorney. Are visa officers immigration attorneys? And, you know, what is the difference?
They are not. They are not immigration attorneys, nor do they have anywhere near the training in the law. That's why, you know, like we said, you can get an officer that's been there for a few weeks. They've gone through a training course in BC, but it can't cover everything that they're going to see when they're on the job. And so they're just, you know, relatively inexperienced when they begin. Now, why then do we, as very experienced consular officers who have had our careers doing 4 or 6 years of these visa interviews, what do we have to offer in excess of what a lawyer can offer you? Well, what we were integral to was the process of how cases are dealt with from when they walk out the door to when administrative processing happens to when the visa is issued and printed. We were involved in that process, and that process is not in the law. That's something that just happens internally in the consulate, in the embassy. Also, we we're part of a community of visa officers that is making these decisions, not only making them, but talking about these decisions day in and day out for years, right? And so our thinking becomes very normalized across the board and very standardized. And so the way that we think about these cases is very much unique to the consular officer's experience. And it's not written down in the law. It's not written down in the regulations, even very standard policies that managers tell their visa officers how they're supposed to interpret things and how they're supposed to adjudicate cases. It's stuff that's not written down in the law. It's just the internal practices and procedures and culture of what happens when you're a visa officer.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And one other thing I always like to tell clients is, you know, this is a very individual process. When you go in for your visa interview, it's only you at the window. So it's really just a conversation that happens between you and the visa officer. Nobody else is allowed to go with you, including, you know, your immigration attorney. So as much as immigration attorneys do a lot of work with, you know, petitions that go to USCIS, which is the other immigration agency within the United States, they really don't have, you know, personal knowledge of what actually happens at the visa interview. They are just hearing back from visa applicants after the fact and hearing secondhand of a client's interpretation of what happened. And this is important because most of the time, applicants don't really know why they were denied a visa. Mm-hmm. You might think they know, or you might think you know, maybe you were denied a visa, and you might think it's because of the last question you were asked before you were given that letter that says, hey, 214B, mm-hmm. lack of ties, but you really have no idea. And it's because it's a very holistic process. Visa officers are required to take into consideration the entire life circumstances of someone before making a decision. And, you know, perhaps they asked about your family before they refused you. It likely is not because of something with your family that they refused you. And this is why it is so important in preparation to know what your case is going to look like and come across to a visa officer to make sure that you're fully prepared.
That's right. And people, you know, they want to know why were they refused, right? I want people who are listening, I want you to know very clearly that people on the outside will try to tell you that they know the answer. They don't. They don't know why you were refused. They may even try to sell you a fraudulent service where they say that they can actually ask the embassy or consulate and they've got connections and they can find out why you were refused. That's not true either, right? There are very strict controls on sharing that information. If they say that they've got somebody on the inside who will tell them, it's simply not true. And even when you come to us, I will tell you that we can give you the absolute best interpretation from your account of what happened during the interview and everything in your application about why you were refused. But we are also just relying on our intuition and our experience to make the best guess possible. There's no one that can tell you with 100% certainty why you were refused. In the same way, a lot of clients ask me, can you guarantee that I'll get the visa? And I want to be very clear in saying, no, I cannot guarantee that you'll get the visa. Mandy can't guarantee that you'll get the visa, and no one out there can guarantee that you'll get the visa. If someone's guaranteeing you this, they're absolutely trying to fool you. They're trying to take advantage of you. That's not possible. No one can guarantee it. And it's because of what we've just talked about. Every visa officer, regardless of their level of experience, of expertise, of knowledge, of language skills, each one can make whatever decision they want with every case that comes to their window. And there's no way to pre-program a decision that's going to be made at that interview. What we can do, though, is prepare you in such a way and give you a strategy that's going to maximize the chance that whatever visa officer you encounter will issue your visa instead of refuse it. We can maximize that for you. In many cases, we can almost guarantee, almost, but we can never 100% guarantee.
Yeah. I think those are very important points, Ben. And so, you know, these visa officers that people encounter at their embassy or consulate, will they only have experience in one country? How does the moving around work? Are they permanently there? How long will they be doing the job?
That's a good question, because people seem to be very focused on, I want an officer that served in Jordan or Ukraine or Nepal, right? Well, there's obviously, I'm not gonna say there's not an advantage. There's an advantage to having served in that country specifically, because you'll even know the names of the local staff that are in that office that are handling these visas and passing them. You might still know some of the officers there, you know the terminology, you know the names of the documents that are important to that those officers are going to look for and make their decision based on, but they're gonna move around. The officers are going to move around. They'll be in one place for 2 years and they'll be assigned to another country for 2 years. And then maybe even to another country for 2 years, right? Which what that means is that these practices, this thinking, the standards get rotated around the world. It's like the world is a bowl and they just put a spoon in and they stir it up. And every few years, people get moved around. And what did they take with them? Like I was in China, then I was in Colombia. What did I take to Colombia with me? My experience doing visas in China, all the practices, all the procedures, all the standards, all the ways that we would analyze an applicant's situation, I took that to Colombia with me. And I encountered other people in Colombia who were coming from Mauritania, from France, from India, from Korea, and all these other countries, and they're bringing those standards with them. And I'm learning from them and they're learning from me. And so this is how the thinking and the culture and the mindset of a consular officer gets standardized across the entire globe.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like you explained that really well, Ben. And, you know, I think part of the strength of ARGO is that we have a group of former consular officers, you know, who have conversations about, you know, specific cases, and we can offer our expertise in certain countries where we have worked, but also it's just, you know, us putting all of our brains together and really understanding exactly, you know, how consular officers think, how we approach cases, what do we care about psychologically, how do we deal with, you know, making decisions under a lot of time pressure. It can be a very stressful job. And why is it that sometimes it actually takes us more time to get to the bottom of somebody's case and to help somebody's case versus just making a refusal that, you know, could take a lot less time, which gives you more time to, you know, interview the next people in line. So these are all things that visa officers have to deal with on a regular basis. And I think to succeed at this process, you really have to understand how we operate and our mindset and how do we explain things? How can you explain things in a way that is easily understood by us and taken well by us?
Absolutely. And so I hope that this conversation today, Mandy, has helped some of our listeners. I hope that this has helped you understand the visa officers, understand the mindset, understand their background, understand a little bit more about them so that when you go and you have your interview, you feel a little bit more confident so that you're better able to express yourself. You don't seize up, you don't get really nervous, and maybe that'll help you get your visa issued.
Yeah, I hope so too, Ben. And, you know, if you guys have any questions, perhaps you're someone who encountered problems at your visa interview, you're stuck in 221G administrative processing, you've had prior refusals, please shoot us an email at hello@argovisa.com. We can share with you how we can help. And we look forward to hearing from you. We also regularly answer questions from our listeners on air. So if you have a question that you would like us to address, you know, during our podcast, please send those to hello@argovisa.com as well.
hello@argovisa.com. We're looking forward to your emails. Thanks a lot, everybody.
See you next time.